United States v. Stein, Mr. Lewis, and Ms. Lewis.
May I please report? My name is Brooke L. Lewis, and I represent Guy Stein, appellant.
Could you wait, please, until everybody gets out of the way here?
My name is Brooke L. Lewis, and I represent appellant Guy Stein. I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. We request the court to vacate a very limited portion of the judgment underlying just the restitution judgment and loss calculation entered by the district court with regard to the Austin Dempster and the Green Bay Emerson currency exchanges for the reasons as set forth in our brief. First, the restitution judgment constitutes an abuse of discretion, and second, the loss calculation is clearly erroneous. Both arguments.
What is the loss amount?
The total loss amount is $900,000+. Here we're only discussing, I believe it's somewhere around $400,000. The arguments hinge on the.
But I see. I can't understand. I don't understand what Judge Pallmeyer was saying about, you know, mistakes and the calculation and her correction. Can you clarify that?
Absolutely. The original sentencing was for, we filed a motion to reconsider, and one section of that sentencing and the restitution was taken out, and that was for a separate currency exchange that's not considered here in the appeal, obviously. That Mr. Stein had entered into an agreement prior to any charges being entered into an agreement to repay him with some cash and some property and some notes that he could collect.
Yeah, I'm just asking about the numbers. What is the amount of loss?
Well, that would be what's under dispute, Your Honor.
Well, I don't understand. You want it to be higher? So Judge Pallmeyer
No.
thinks it's $958,000, is that right?
Correct. And we're only
what
disputing...
What do you think it is?
We're only disputing the amount from the Green Bay Emerson and Austin Dempster.
I'm just interested in the bottom line. That's what determines the guidelines range, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. But it also would include what the restitution judgment is. And the...
Yes, well, I know. I just want to know what the number is.
The Austin Dempster is 265.
No. What is the number? Is 958? Do we have to know any other number besides 958,000?
It would be the number that we would be seeking would be the 958,000 minus the 265 for the Austin Dempster currency exchange and the 175. From the Green Bay Emerson currency exchange.
So you're not challenging those numbers. You're saying those should be totally be eliminated, the 265
correct.
And 175, as opposed to saying it should be 250 instead of 265.
Correct, because we weren't able to determine, due to Mr. Wiley pleading the fifth, and due to a number of other, we weren't able to determine what the actual profit made by the currency exchanges was, which brings me back to my argument, which is that Mr. Wiley was a co-conspirator, was a co-schemer, was actually actually thought up the scheme himself, was a co-owner of the currency exchanges at the time of the check-kiting scheme. And now the currency exchanges are claiming a loss based on the certain number of checks which did not clear. We're not disputing that the banks are owed whatever money they lost. We're only disputing that the currency exchanges made over the course of time a significant amount of money on well over $15 million worth of checks that were kited, again, pursuant to a scheme that the currency exchange was a part of. So really we're at the point where the currency exchanges made hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars upon this scheme. And now they're claiming that they lost money on these specific checks, but the government is failing to take into account
What are the fees they lost? What's the fee per transaction?
That would be in dispute, Your Honor. The government claims that it's 1% based on what Mr. Wiley told the government. However, we weren't able to actually cross-examine Mr. Wiley, and that doesn't hold up compared to any of the other statements that were made, including by third parties, including by our client, that it was somewhere in the realm of 2.25, 2.5%, and it sort of changed on a per transaction basis.
Well, they're not on the Grand Avenue currency exchange of $254,000. You're not challenging that one, huh?
I believe the Grand Avenue currency exchange was Mr. Feldman, which was actually overturned during the motion to reconsider.
So that one doesn't count anymore.
So that one doesn't. That's not part of the 958, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess that was in the PSR.
Correct. That was in the original PSR and the original sentencing, and then upon reconsideration, Judge Pallmeyer did take out
the debt. So your argument is that the fees of the currency exchanges took out about half of this $958,000?
The $958,000 is not just these two currency exchanges. It also includes other damages. So really all we're looking at is just the numbers from those two currency exchanges, the 265 and the 175. And we believe that the currency exchanges made plenty of profit to well overcome
any.
That would be the question that we need to have determined. And the judge did not take that into consideration, and the government doesn't take that into consideration in their.
Was she asked to?
We did ask her to, yes.
And what did she say?
Because Mr. Wiley refused to testify, she wouldn't hear any argument on it, or she wouldn't use that. And then she did later say.
Well, did you try to present, or whoever represented, did you try to present evidence of what these fees are? It should be pretty straightforward to figure out what a currency exchange charges.
Well, we didn't have the checks, and we didn't have any of the evidence. That was all belonging to
Well, but they had charged a fee, presumably a percentage. So can't you ask the currency exchange, what is your fee?
The currency exchange was Mr. Wiley, and Mr. Wiley took the fifth.
No, well, ask other currency exchanges.
Well, this would be an illegal act, and they were charging well above what the rate would be. They were charging, we believe, 2.25% or more on average.
So it would be reduced by that amount?
It should be reduced by some amount, but we don't know what that amount is.
It's going to be the amount of the fees?
Correct.
That's not very much by comparison, is it?
Absolutely it is, Your Honor. Over the course of the scheme, as agreed to by the government, although it did go on longer than even the government alleged, there were approximately 1,500 checks valued at approximately $13 million. If that's only at the 2.25% interest, and that's happening about every 3 days as the checks turn over, at 2.25% interest, that's almost $300,000 in profit. And that doesn't take into account any of the other checks that happened prior to
the 13 million are all fraudulent transactions?
Correct.
Then why is the amount of restitution so low?
Because all that money was basically cycling through the banks, and the banks didn't know that was going on because they weren't actually losing any money, because it was basically taking a 3-day loan where he would deposit a check into the bank. Or he would write a check. The money wouldn't be in his bank account at the time that he wrote the check. But in the time that it took the check to clear, he'd take a loan from the currency exchange, deposit the money, and it would cycle back around and through. And it was basically a way to get a very short-term loan at a very high interest rate and enable him to fund his business. Mr. Stein wasn't actually making any real money on this.
Well, was any legitimate currency exchange harmed by this activity?
No, Your Honor. Mr. Feldman, again, is this whole separate issue. These two currency exchanges, the ones that we are disputing the sentencing for, these two currency exchanges were directly involved in the scheme.
So you think they were charging very high
charging
fees?
2.25% interest for 3 days worth of holding however much each check was at the time. And he knew and was aware that...
And the legitimate cause would be 1%, is that?
I don't know what the legitimate...
What are you comparing the 2.5% with?
I don't know what a legitimate cost would be, because in this instance there is no such thing as a legitimate cost. He knew that what he was doing was covering for checks that were written that he knew that Mr. Stein didn't have the money for, and he knew Mr. Stein was not going to repay the currency exchange except to get money back.
So you're saying any fee would be part of the fraud?
Absolutely.
How much did the banks lose?
I don't have those numbers completely in front of me.
Well, you said something about $13
million. None of that was lost money by the banks, because it was cycling through.
It's all phony money with a kite,
right.
It's not real. So they're going around and somebody
right. So the money that the banks did lose is in the restitution and in the sentencing, and we're not disputing those amounts. We're only disputing the amounts of restitution and damage supposedly caused to the currency exchanges.
Well, the restitution only goes to innocent people. So, how do the amount of the currency exchange fees relate to the restitution?
The restitution would be what the currency exchanges supposedly lost on those checks that didn't clear.
You're talking about crooked currency exchanges.
Correct.
They can't get restitution, obviously.
Correct.
Who's getting the restitution?
The currency exchange.
Which currency exchange?
Austin Dempster and Green Bay Emerson.
Now, these are legal, right?
They're legal currency exchanges, but they were engaging in illegal acts.
Well, how can they get restitution?
The judge the district court basically put a separation between the co-owner of the currency exchange, Mr. Wiley, who was a participant in the scheme, and the currency exchange itself and the remaining partners. Mr. Wiley was also, as
is
noted...
Well, you said the currency exchanges were completely crooked. Now you're saying they have some lawful aspect that enables them to get restitution?
They are lawful currency exchanges, but those acts which are included in the underlying...
Well, then why are they getting any restitution?
Because the judge drew a line between the individual...
But what does that mean, that line between... These currency exchanges had a legitimate dimension? Is that what you're saying?
These currency exchanges were running legitimate businesses other than these...
And they lost... And the losses in their legitimate business, that's what they...
No.
That's the restitution?
The loss...
What's the restitution of?
The checks that did not clear.
Well, now you're not answering my question. What is the legitimate activity of the currency exchange that's the basis for the restitution?
There is none, Your Honor, which is why we're...
But you just said they're getting restitution. That has to be for their lawful activities. So what are their lawful activities?
Your Honor, I'm trying to explain that the court... there were multiple partners of these currency exchanges.
Yeah, Wiley only had 30%.
Correct.
So is it your understanding that Judge Pallmeyer felt that the 70% ownership should get restitution for the losses that...
That Mr. Wiley, that their own partner caused.
Yes.
And that Mr. Wiley was also stealing from them, entirely separate from what was going on here. And Mr. Wiley wasn't even charged with anything. Again, he took the fifth.
Okay, so that's the restitution. Now, is it your view that restitution is offset by the fees that the currency exchanges were charging? Is that the idea?
Absolutely, because the currency exchanges were charging fees for illegal transactions.
Well, and why don't we know what these fees are? You say they have a lawful owner, currency exchanges.
They do, but then I don't believe that it was all on the books. Mr. Wiley was charging...
Well, I don't understand. You have a law... This currency exchange has a lawful dimension. Many of its transactions are lawful. It has an owner who is lawful. So why can't you find out what their fees are?
Because the owner who was doing these transactions was not was a lawful owner in the sense of ownership, but was not doing lawful acts.
This is incomprehensible. some person got restitution for lawful losses.
We're actually arguing that that's not the case.
Oh, come on. You think restitution is zero because it's all crooked? Is that what you're arguing?
Yes. We believe that that you have to look at the scheme as a whole.
Forget that. Look, I thought we were talking about the fees, the currency fees.
We are.
And you think that all the legitimate losses were offset by currency fees. Isn't that your position?
The currency exchange wrote checks that did
not
clear.
Is that your position or not? That lawful losses that for which restitution would be appropriate were offset by these fees. Isn't that what you're arguing?
I don't believe that the losses were lawful, but if you wanted to qualify them in that manner, yes, that's exactly
it. But restitution.
I don't believe they should get restitution. Because I believe that looking at...
But if they get restitution, then you're saying, even if they got restitution, it would be offset by these fees.
Correct.
But why can't you find someone to tell you what the fees were when you say there's a lawful owner?
Because that was foreclosed and because the judge did not want to go into what the fees were because she wasn't considering that.
Is there someone besides Wiley who knew this?
Wiley was the one who was participating in the scheme, and he was the one who was running the numbers.
Guy. Is there a good guy in these currency exchanges?
His father-in-law, which I believe is the other owner of the currency exchange, has
so
the currency.
He's ripping off his father-in-law, that's right.
He stole from his father-in-law, yes.
And
they're
a bigger business than just this.
Yes. And Mr. Wiley was running his illegal scheme on the side, essentially, but was contributing at least some portion of this back into the business.
So why couldn't the father-in-law be asked what the currency fees are?
Because the currency fees wouldn't be straight across the board. It would be whatever Wiley chose to
charge
at any given
time. Why didn't you ask the father-in-law?
Because the father-in-law wouldn't know.
How do you know he wouldn't know?
Because he wasn't involved in the transactions.
But he'd know what the normal fee is, right?
He would, but the normal fee wouldn't be relevant here because the normal fee, one, isn't what Wiley charged because Wiley knew what he was doing was illegal. And two, again, this was illegal, so any fee charged would itself be illegal because it was coming from an illegal act.
You want to take out about $440,000, is that right?
Something like that,
no,
yes,
you
Your Honor.
Want to take out everything.
No, only that which...
Loss? I don't understand.
You want to reduce that from the 985.
Correct. I want
but
to reduce...
You want to reduce it to zero. You don't think anyone is entitled to restitution.
No, absolutely not, Your Honor.
Who's entitled to restitution?
Everyone in the judgment except... In the reconsidered judgment except...
Okay, none of those people know what currency fees are?
No, because those were separate incidents. The vast majority of what's left is actually comes from... a separate act that was in the plea agreement that Mr. Stein cashed some bonds that he believed he had the right to cash, but he provided false statements to the bank in order to cash them. So those would be entirely separate from the currency exchange issue. So I'm asking that the currency exchange, the Austin Dempster currency exchange and the Green Bay Emerson currency exchange, that the numbers for those exchanges only get reduced off of the
and
total.
And what's your 2.5% figure from?
From both my client and the third party, Mr. Rossini.
Well, apart from whatever it's 1% or 2.5%, Ms. Lewis, there's no question that the $440,000 roughly that you want reduced, the currency exchanges put aside good owners and not such good owners for a second, if that's fair to say. They lost that money. The entity of an exchange lost the $440,000, right?
The entity of the exchange did lose that money. It also made a significant amount of illegal profit, which is where the set-off comes in.
I understand. So you think if we could arrive at the right figure on the charge per transaction, that would bring down somehow to the roughly $440,000 less than what was found by Judge Pallmeyer to be the accurate figure.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Lewis. Ms. Rodman?
May it please the Court, Renee Rodney on behalf of the United States. Your Honor, hopefully I can provide some clarity to the issues here.
You're welcome.
The appellant is challenging the restitution and loss amount determined based on the return checks that the Austin Dempster and Green Bay Emerson currency exchanges cashed for the appellant. The district court took the amount of those return checks and based the loss calculation on that amount and based the associated restitution judgment on that amount as well. It's the government's position that there was no clear error in following that methodology. In fact, the appellant does not dispute that the amount of the return checks is this approximate $440,000 figure. As far as what Mr. Wiley's role was, whether there are other co-schemers in this, that argument is based purely on conjecture and speculation of the appellant. There is nothing in the record to support that. I believe in the appellant's allocution at sentencing, he blamed Mr. Wiley. The appellants put forth that argument over and over in their position papers, but there's no actual evidence in the record to support that. Judge Pallmeyer considered their argument that Mr. Wiley may have had some involvement. She entertained that argument. She said he may have had an improper role, but it's the victim of this defendant's check-kiting scheme is the currency exchange entity.
Yeah, but it gets a little confusing when Mr. Wiley is, quote, a member of the victim's status, right?
Mr. Wiley was a one-third owner at the time of the offense conduct.
So is the government viewing Mr. Wiley as a victim?
No. As of the time of the
sentencing, he's an owner. He's a non-victim owner of the exchange?
If I could clarify, Your Honor, this offense conduct happened in the summer of 2010. Mr. Wiley proffered with the government in or around December of 2010. At that time, he no longer had an ownership role in the currency exchanges. So his father-in-law was the owner of the currency exchanges. He was, as I articulated to the district court, it's the father-in-law who is the recipient of the victim impact statement and who still owns these currency exchanges today. So it is the currency exchanges who would receive the restitution based on these bad checks that they negotiated for the defendant.
Well, but Mr. Wiley was in ownership position during the scheme that Mr. Stein participated in, didn't he?
He was a one-third owner, yes.
Right.
And then after this check-kiting scheme came to light, what it appears that happened is that he was taken out of that ownership position and demoted, so to speak, to an employee. This is a family business. He was married to, or his wife's father was the majority owner.
So they just demoted him, didn't fire him, huh?
The last information I have, Your Honor, is based on our December 2010 proffer of Mr. Wiley. It was the appellant who subpoenaed him for the sentencing proceedings, not the government. We did not question him any further. So the information I have is as of December 2010, that he was an employee as of that date.
Do you have a comment on the currency fee issue? I'm very confused about that.
Well, I believe the appellant believes that it's a higher fee. It's the government's position that the fee doesn't matter because during the time period where these checks were being returned unpaid by the bank, more likely than not, the currency exchange was not collecting any fee because the checks were returned unpaid. The district court acknowledged that and acknowledged the government's argument that if any fee was collected during this time period of the $440,000 loss, it was de minimis. It wouldn't offset to a significant degree the loss amount or the restitution. So what? And
are you saying that because these are fraudulent transactions, the defrauders would not be paying a fee? Is that the idea?
Well, no, Your Honor. I'm just explaining. If you look at how a check is cashed at a currency exchange, the currency exchange can impose a fee, whether it's 1% or 2.25%. They can either do it by having the patron pay that 2.25% up front or just deducting it from the amount of cash given back. In this case, where you have you know, cash given back upwards to $10,000, and the bank ultimately dishonors that check. The currency exchange is out of far more than any fee what it would have charged. So the fee, which is of no issue for the government, whether the court considered it to be 1% or 2% or 2.25%, really doesn't matter because it doesn't impact the greater loss caused by the return checks cashed by the defendant. So we would accept for the sake of argument that perhaps a higher fee was charged. I believe the appellant has latched on that argument to bolster their own argument that somehow the currency exchange is profited, but there's just been no credible evidence in the record that was in fact the case.
Well, Ms. Lewis suggested that there were $13 million of transactions and that 2% of $13 million would be $260,000, and that somehow those are receipts by the recipients of the restitution.
Right. Well, Your Honor, I think if we follow that path, that before the loss was detected by the banks, by the appellant's banks, and they stopped honoring all of these checks, before that happened, he was able to keep the check kiting going, and as his plea agreement states, he kited approximately 1,500 checks, totaling approximately $13 million, which leads to possibly a fee collected by the currency exchange of a little less than $300,000. But if we go down that line, then we need to be holding the appellant accountable for $13 million in intended loss, which is not the position the government took. Mm-hmm. The government focused solely on actual loss to determine his guidelines range. So the appellant would have to eat that higher intended loss amount figure for his guidelines calculation, and I doubt that he's willing to do that. But I think the bottom line here is with the evidence presented to the court based on the amount of the return checks, its finding as to the loss was sound. It was reasonable. It was a reasonable estimate of the loss. It was not unreasonable or clear error for the court to speculate without any evidence that could have been gotten from other sources, for example, the father-in-law, that any money was made prior to the bank detecting the loss. And finally, Your Honor, I'd just like to point out that even if the court were to send this back and order the district court to cancel out the currency exchange loss, which the government certainly is not asking for, Mr. Stein's guidelines range would be the same. His restitution amount, of course, would be lowered, but I think when you look at this in the context of the standard of review, was a clear error for the judge to look at the amount of return checks cashed by the defendants and base her loss calculation on that. There can be no clear error in that sense.
Well, normally in a check kite, this money gets shuffled around.
Yeah.
It's the shuffler that's taken the share, and that's the problem. And the bank that ends up with the reject usually loses money on a check kite. But that's because somebody like Wiley took some of that money while it was being phonied around in a circle. It's the only way I can describe it. And that's it's not real money. It's almost like it's just pretend, and they take it's sort of like selling stuff, taking a commission on something that you're not really selling. I don't quite understand this, I have to admit.
Right. So, well, I guess, Your Honor, in that sense, it'd be a short-term loan that the bank didn't agree to. What we do have in the record is Mr. Wiley is the report attached to the government's sentencing memo of Mr. Wiley's proffer, where he explains his relationship with Mr. Stein and how this all came about. I understand the appellant disputes that, but to the extent they weren't able to get any more information from Mr. Wiley at the sentencing, they certainly have the discovery in this case to bolster their argument. They chose not to put forth any evidence to support this alternate calculation. So left with the record before it, the court made a correct decision.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Rodman.
Thank you.
Ms. Lewis, we'll give you another minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
What did you think of Ms. Rodney's argument that the $13 million is the intended loss?
I don't believe that's the intended loss. I think that it can't get to that point if it...
Why?
Because it can't get to that point if the banks discover actual loss.
Intended loss.
But the only loss is in the fact that the scheme stopped. Is in when the scheme falls apart. And in this case, that happened when Mr. Stein got it. Your Honor, you stated something about the them taking something off the top, and that's why it comes to a halt. In this case, that was because Mr. Stein got into a car accident and couldn't keep the circle moving. As to the intended loss versus actual loss, I do believe that that's the government's prerogative to choose whether it wants to proceed on intended or actual, and they did proceed on actual loss. That said,
but
the plea agreement
is... intended loss exceeded that because the actual loss was truncated by an automobile accident.
The actual loss was the only loss that occurred when the scheme came to an end. Prior to that, the money, as Your Honor stated, was funny money, was just sort of circling, invisible money that was swirling around that Mr. Wiley was taking his share of, and Mr. Stein was getting...
So you're saying if it had gone on for years and years, there would have been no greater loss?
Unless the checks that actually bounced were a greater amount, no.
So you think check kiting does not produce losses, only the end of check kiting?
I think it produces losses when people like Mr. Wiley take their percentage, when the banks get their money taken from them and their resources taken from them because of the scheme. I don't believe that...
Well, that has to happen eventually, doesn't it? Or do you think there are harmless check kiting schemes?
I think it does have to happen eventually, but I think that the loss is the actual
loss. That's the intended loss. What will happen at the end if this scheme goes on indefinitely or for years? It's going to be a bigger loss than if it ends after 3 days, right?
Is there a bigger loss, though? Because... In terms of actual loss, because the actual loss is simply the number that the bank actually lost, and the number that the currency exchange.
Yes, but you know when you go into a checks kiting scheme, you presumably have some idea of how long it's likely to last, or ideally how long it will last, and the longer it lasts, the greater the loss. Isn't that true?
In this instance, I think both of those things are incorrect. Mr. Stein came into the currency exchange originally to get a loan. Mr. Wiley said he didn't have the credit for a loan, but he could give him a loan by writing him checks, or by cashing checks. Mr. Stein only found out once the scheme had gotten started that it was check kiting, that it was illegal, and then he couldn't pull out of it because he couldn't stop it without causing the actual loss to the banks. Or to
so you
the
say he derived no bigger. Benefit from it?
Correct.
It's getting bigger and bigger because there's money trimmed off of it. And it's the phony money going around, but in order to keep paying, it has to be pretend to be more. And so it's going to get bigger and bigger until somebody says, hey, this is worth it, and refuses payment.
Correct. And Mr. Wiley was the one who was taking all of that.
Previous check.
Which brings me around to Mr. Wiley getting restitution, or Mr. Wiley's father-in-law, but still the currency exchange.
Wiley.
Well, thank you very much. Were you appointed?
No, Your Honor.
No.
Well, we represented him at the lower court.
Well, we thank you, and of course, Ms. Rodney, for your.